Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condor, and his name is, you all know him and love him, it's Mr.
It's Mr. Ben Harrington! I don't know what tune I was going to do then.
I like to, it's like a weird jazzy sort of game show. I
come in like that to the audience. Yeah.
Well, actually, you don't. You sort of on a you're like on a revolving platform.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I'm on a revolving platform covered in plastic fruit.
Yes.
Just to look delicious.
Like a contestant, and then like on your little screen, it's got your name which you've handwritten on the screen. Do you know what I mean? It's just like Ben. Yeah, that's the one. Like, and it's like it's dark, and then you come out to the light.
Oh yeah, this is good. You've thought about this.
I have. Yeah.
And.
It's hot. It is hot. I mean,
it's sweaty.
Yeah. Did you get crazy thunderstorms last night? We got the craziest thunderstorms last night.
So I'm pretty sure I did, because when I woke up, everybody put it on their social media. You know, those great footage of thunderstorms. You know, I mean, if you ever wanted some.
Yeah.
And I slept through it. I was really tired last night, and I ended up. Must have been in the deepest sleep, because I usually would get woken up by thunderstorms, but definitely hit Bristol, but I didn't see it. I was asleep.
Oh, that's a shame, because it was something special. It was like, you know, when Neo first wakes up from the Matrix and he goes through the crazy, smoggy storms bit. It was like waking up to that.
The smoggy storms, okay.
Yeah, smoggy storms.
Very interesting. Yeah. I'm glad I missed it, because I do find it quite therapeutic watching a good old thunderstorm.
It was nice. It was like someone was like flicking on the daylight switch on the big light on.
What time was it?
About 3 o'clock, I think.
I woke you up, did it? I bet you were all grouchy when it was bloody thunderstorm.
Man, I was so hot. I don't think I ever managed to get a proper sleep last night. It was too hot. It was like being in an oven. I mean, you can't sleep in an oven. I mean, your food doesn't get a chance to go for a nap in the oven, does it? It's too hot.
Yeah.
Think about it.
I kept all right last night, somehow. I'll tell you what. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I've got the door open at the moment. I've got the fan on.
Yeah.
What I've been doing is like sort of putting cold water. Putting cold water on my arms and my head, and just lying in front of the fan. It's beautiful.
That's quite good. That sounds good.
Right. I need to get some ice to place in my undercarriage.
We've been stacking up on ice poles. As you call them, ice pops, as we call them.
Yeah, ice pops.
Yeah,
I love a good pole, mate. I mean, I like a pop, but I like a pole even more. So,
pop man. So, you've got some horror news, right?
Got some horror news for us to discuss, Luke. I've got some stories. That's number one. But apparently, that's two. R-rated for us to even discuss, because it's gonna make people have actual nightmares. So let's talk about some other news. So I'll start with the latest news, which dropped today, is that Rutger Hauer has died.
Okay, yeah. Man is born.
The oldest man is born. The oldest news, Big Bang happens.
Yeah.
So Rutger Hauer of, you know, like Blade Runner, The Hitcher, Salem's Lot, he was in, 2004 adaptation. He's in things like, obviously, Batman Begins, Sin City, and recently, well, fairly recently, Hobo with a Shotgun.
Yeah, Hobo with a
Shotgun. So, yeah.
And that's a shame. Channel Zero.
75.
He's in the 13th of Channel Zero fairly recently.
Yes. Yeah.
Thanks.
Channel Zero Butcher's Block. So he's got his fingers in the old horror pie.
He's a fantastic presence. Like his face and eyes and the way he looks at things. He looks like he wants to eat you. He would make a great cannibal.
Yeah. Has he ever played a cannibal? Probably not. Maybe not. Hobo with a Shotgun, though. Have you seen Hobo with a Shotgun?
I've
only seen it once, but I remember it being utterly, utterly mental. So it's a grindhouse gore fest. Yeah, so rest in peace, Rutger Hauer. Also, we've got obviously all the Marvel news this week. Probably no point chatting about all of it, but in terms of horror, we're going to get a Blade movie. Now,
and the Doctor Strange movie.
And
said
Doctor Strange. I was going to add that, mate. All right. Don't step on my don't step on my toes, mate. Obviously, this. I mean, it's going to be probably a PG-13 or a PG Blade movie. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't be. Maybe they'll do the first 15 rated MCU movie. But Mahershala Ali, Oscar winner. You recognize him for things like Green Book, True Detective, Alita. He was in recently, and in Alita, he was wearing sunglasses and sort of like quite dark clothes.
I thought
he looked like he's wearing vampire teeth. He looks like he'd make a good Blade. Now, apparently, he won best Oscar. He won best Oscar. He won best actor, and then he called up Kevin Feige. Is that how you say his name?
Feige.
He called up Kevin Feige. Went, I want to do the Blade film. And he went, well, really? Do you? And he went, I've got Oscar here.
Yeah.
And so they've let him do it. And we don't know much about it because it was the last announcement. How do you feel about that? How would they bring vampires to the?
I don't think they do anything in the Marvel universe now, can't they? Like,
people are.
They used to say, "Oh, it's like the magic stuff is just science," but now the original four films, like, oh, it's just science, but you just don't understand it. But now it's like Doctor Strange. Now it's magic again. It's all multidimensional. They can do anything in the Marvel universe now. That's fine. Blade, I think we've got our three, Blade 1 and 2 movies, but I don't want to talk about Blade Trinity too much. But we've got our Wesley Snipes Blade movies, and they're fantastic. Like, we don't need Wesley Snipes to come back in again.
I mean, he's old, isn't he? He's old. And in one of the, in the Blade films, he was being a bit of a diva, wasn't he? Isn't that true?
Have you seen that where
in Blade 2,
didn't want
CGI'd eyes?
Yeah, they CGI'd his eyes on because he refused to open them for a shot.
That is utterly ridiculous. Like, someone on the film should just have come in there and gone, Wesley Snipes, for fuck's sake. Like, what are you doing? And apparently he also referred to Ryan Reynolds on Blade Trinity as that cracker.
Really?
Allegedly.
He's a bit of a cracker.
I mean, I'm not 100% sure on that. He's a bit of a cracker. He's crackers.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this should be good. And also, Doctor Strange sequel, The Multiverse of Madness, which is directed. Is it Scott Derrickson?
Scott Derrickson.
So he's done Sinister, so he's done a bit of horror before, so he knows his. I've never seen that, though. Apparently Doctor Strange is going to be the first. He's going to be the first horror movie in the MCU, but I'm assuming it'll just probably be a bit spooky. Have some ghosts, have some jump scares, maybe a ghost. Maybe something strange.
Yeah.
So, that's news. And also, John Carpenter revealed that there are going to be two Halloween sequels to last year's movie.
John Carpenter revealed this.
He did reveal this, yeah. Well, that's where I first saw it, anyway.
Oh, okay.
It was officially confirmed by John Carpenter, and I think everywhere else followed suit. So, in 2020, we're going to get a film called Halloween Kills, and in 2021, we're going to get a film called Halloween Ends? No, there's not a question mark.
I think that's kind of cool. I quite like the new one they did last year. Is it last year? This year? Whatever it was. I'm up for that. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, the new one was good, but you know, it'd be interesting to see where they go, because now we know that in Halloween Kills, Mike Myers. I always say Mike Myers every time. Michael Myers isn't going to die.
Yeah, well, you never know.
Can he die?
Yeah. Can he die?
Please. Well, anyway, so it was pretty good. And if it's going to be directed by David Gordon Green, he's returning to direct both. So, yeah, we could get a nice, almost like self-contained, well, I know it still relates to the first film, but like a nice self-contained trilogy. And I guess it's good because this could get confirmed, because a lot of people were kind of wondering about things. What's it going to be called? Is it going to be called Halloween 2 again? Which would have been
Halloween Ends.
And Halloween Kills is the next one, and then Halloween Ends will be the one 2021. Halloween Kills what? Who's Halloween?
Yeah, exactly,
who's he killing? I thought maybe they would call it Michael Myers, or Halloween Michael Myers, or Halloween Mikey Myers.
Mikey Myers.
The Shape. Well, originally was The Shape possibly going to be the name of Halloween, the latest one?
I think maybe that's what they, before they announced it properly, they were working on something called The Shape or something. Something like that, I can't remember. But he's credited as The Shape in the original film. So I think that would have been a good sequel name. But then they wouldn't be able to, in marketing terms, they just wouldn't be able to sell it as well as they did. It's Halloween. People know that like instantly. With The Shape, it's like, Shape of what? We've got Shape of Water.
The Shape of you. I'm in love with the shape of Michael Myers. Exactly. He's really tall and he wears a boiler suit. He's got a mask. It was William Shatner. That's it. That's as far as I've got. Write that down, Luke.
I'll record it.
My brain.
I'm going to add some music to it. I'm going to release it on SoundCloud and make a million.
Oh, lovely.
SoundCloud links.
Make a million credits. That's it for me. Got any news?
Nope. It's stuff and guff, though. I've watched a few things. If you'd like to
partake. Yeah, I love to partake in stuff and guffs that we've watched and consumed.
So I watched Gozu. Gozu is... I was going for a bit of a Takashi Miike little phase. Takashi Miike did audition. Yeah. And he's done 100 films or something, apparently, now. And I was like, oh, I'm really fancy a really bizarre movie. And apparently Gozu by Takashi Miike is as bizarre as you're going to get. So it opens with a Yakuza bodyguard. And then the Yakuza bodyguard says, watch out, boss. Do you see that there? There's a dog in the window. And it's like this tiny little chihuahua puppy thing. And then the Yakuza boss is like, haha, yeah, it's a cute puppy. And then he goes, no, that's a Yakuza assassin puppy. It's going to kill you. And they think he's joking. Then he goes outside and then he picks the dog up on the lead and starts swinging it around on the end of the lead. He starts bashing it against the curb and just like smushes this puppy. So obviously he's gone off the deep end. He thinks everything, like they're driving him away and there's a car behind him. And he says, you see that Fiat Punto? And he goes, that's a Yakuza killing Fiat Punto. And then he's about to kill the guy in the car. Like, he's just gone. He's just lost it. So this guy's got to take him somewhere to have him dealt with. And they take him to this weird little Japanese town. It's just gets more and more bizarre. It's like kind of lynching. There's like a woman who is trying to get him to drink the milk from a massive boobs. there's a cow. There's a minotaur in it at one point. And it's got maybe the most bizarre scene I've ever seen in the last shot or the last little sequence. I don't know if you're going to watch it. I probably don't want to spoil it if you do watch it, because the last shot is something special. It's like you think you're kind of enjoying it, but it's like, it's a bit slow. I'm not too sure if this was really worth the 2 hour runtime. Then you get to that last bit and you go, oh, okay, yeah, it was worth it for that.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
Yeah, so Gozu by Takashi Miike. I think it's worth it if you enjoy bizarre stuff that doesn't make too much sense.
How do you spell it?
G-O-Z-U.
Oh, yeah.
Golf Oscar Zulu Uniform. Right, and Gozu. Then I watched High Rise. Have you seen High Rise, the Ben Wheatley film?
Yeah, I've seen High Rise, but if I remember right, sorry, you tell me.
High Rise is based on an adaptation of a J.G. Ballard novel. I don't know the story. I like Ben Wheatley a lot. I like Kill List and Sightseers and those kind of things a lot. This is quite a weirdly big budget thing. Like, it seems kind of massive, like, for what it is. It's not a straightforward film. It's not a straightforward narrative. Basically, everyone in this big, massive tower block, where you've got the working class down at the bottom, and the middle class in the middle, and the upper, like, royalties. I think the guy who lives at the top floor is even called John Royal or something like that. So they all go nuts for some reason. You never find out why, and they start killing each other, and they start little gang wars and stuff for no reason. It just gets worse and worse. Gets absolutely bonkers. And you never really... It starts Tom Hiddleston. He's the main character, but I don't really know what his sort of purpose is halfway through the film. It's insane. Yeah. Which is kind of amazing that something like that could get made on that massive scale budget. But I very much doubt they made the money back on this. Surely not.
Yeah. I didn't really like it, but maybe do you know sometimes when you watch something and you're like, you feel yourself like getting like physically frustrated? Like, I felt like that. So maybe I just wasn't in the right frame of mind for it. But it's probably the first Ben Wheatley film I haven't enjoyed. So, but then maybe it's because he's adapting someone else's material.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder how it compares to the book. It'd be interesting to find out.
Yeah, I don't know the book too well, but that's definitely worth it. I read, so you always hear about one of the best graphic novels of all time. Well, best writer, this is sort of news. Alan Moore has now retired from comics.
Yeah.
Again exactly. But apparently finally.
Yeah, again.
He's not going to be doing it anymore at all. So
finally this time, wink.
So I read Swamp Thing, Volume 1, which is, in the 70s, I think it was his first bigger job in America. And people always talk about how it revolutionized comics, and it's got like a perfect issue that people were kind of like couldn't believe how good this thing was, and yeah, it is amazing. Like, it's there's an issue in this collection. I read the volume one. There's an issue, I think it was issue 21 of the overarching Swamp Thing story, called The Anatomy Lesson, that is the most perfect single issue of a comic book I think I've ever read. It's so well done, and it's horrific. The reveal of Swamp Thing, because I always thought it was just a guy who gets some chemicals on him and he falls into a swamp, and then he sort of comes out as a Swamp Thing. But the reveal of what he actually is a really interesting, horrific sort of little twist to it that I wasn't expecting. Amazing, like really, really good.
I'm pretty sure I've read some of it, but I can't quite remember.
Which is weird, because Alan Moore's run starts on like issue 19, so he's sort of finishing off the previous writer's storylines. So feels a little bit like you're jumping in halfway through and you don't know anything. But he kind of ties us off fairly early, and then when the Anatomy Lesson issue starts, that's when it's pure new ground stuff that he's doing.
Who illustrated that?
Well, this one has a few artists on it, so I think there's I think it maybe changes for different issues. It's not a name I instantly remember, to be honest, but I'll have to check it out. And then lastly, one that you've probably seen yourself, Stranger Things, season 3.
Yes, there we go. Did we discuss this last time? I can't remember.
Well, I watched it on holiday last week.
Okay.
So I don't think
I thought it was good. I thought it was, well, take that back. I thought it was great. I thought it was the best series, because I feel like it felt like it had a lot of freedom in this series. I felt like series one, it was finding its feet. It was working out what the mythology was, introducing characters, building characters. Season two, I felt like it was a bit hampered by trying to fit too much in, and Eleven was kind of relied upon heavily to basically tie up all the loose ends and all the plot points and everything, and I kind of didn't like it. Yeah. This just feels like so much fun. I feel like every character has hit their stride now. Some of the best characters, the introduction of new characters is great. And I feel like it is, I know all the others are set in the 80s, but this is like unashamedly 80s. It's just like clothes, music, the mall, video games, It just felt like the purest Stranger Things essence in however many series, and it felt like it didn't outstay its welcome. It was the perfect length, and I like the fact we had kind of like what, three parallel storylines going on, and they never seemed to overlap each other too much, and they all came together at the end, and it felt organic, and it just felt like really good writing. What did you think?
So I kind of liked it. I'm not as on it as you are. I think you're right. The characters are fantastic. It's funny. Like it's so well paced, and it's got some standout moments. I've been singing the Neverending Story song. Been playing that video.
Back. Amazing. It was probably the scariest it's been as well, right?
Yeah, I liked all the body snatching type stuff as
it's
well.
It's never been as scary as this, I don't think.
So there's a couple of things that sort of really niggled me. The one thing is like the Steve Harrington's storyline about the Russians under the mall.
Yep.
It's very Spy Kids. And like there's bits where like there's a bit where they're running around, running away from these Russian trained security guards with like
and they just push them out of the way.
He throws four of them run into a room and he throws a bin. And they all fall over like dominoes. And I was like, what? This isn't... Like, it just seemed very Spy Kids to me. It just seemed very like a... It went very kids movie, which is fine. But I was like, it's not quite as sort of serious, I guess, as the previous season. That's going to be fine. Because it was more of a sort of a fun season. The other thing... I always felt like season one and two felt like... It feels like the aesthetic has changed. It used to be... This is something that could have been released in the 80s. Like you can't tell. Now it's not like that. Now it's like we're celebrating stuff from the 80s. Which is fine. It's just that it's a different aesthetic, and I kind of miss the camera movements used to be slower. There used to be a bit more of a film grain, and it used to be a lot more brown, and it used to look like, oh my god, is this a film from the 80s?
I want it to be more brown.
Yeah, for most things. I like my food brown. I like my TV shows brown.
To be fair, though, the soundtrack was great. I feel like the inclusion of, like, Day of the Dead soundtrack.
Yeah, that was a good moment as well at the start.
I think there were loads of good standout moments. I feel like certain characters, like, I mean, Hopper for me has always been the...
I think Hopper was the best MVP. Character in this
season. And then I think Billy got a lot more to do, and they sort of doubled down on him being, like, a nasty piece of work.
But you got, like, redeeming qualities as well. They kind of deepened his...
Yeah, redeeming qualities, definitely.
Yeah.
New characters like the Russian dude who likes Slurpees.
Alexei. So, again, the Terminator guy, that's fine. This must just be a conscious decision. They were like, we're not going to try and recreate what we could have seen in the 80s now. Now we're just going to play with what the 80s is. And,
Now we're going to sort of like, it's like an homage to the 80s rather than like a recreation of something that could have been in the
80s.
It was good.
So I enjoyed it. I think it's, for me, it's season one, season three, and then season two. But they're all very much, very highly up there.
Hell yes.
That's it. What about you? You see anything else?
So I'll go through mine quite quickly because I've watched quite a lot over the last couple of weeks. I've been hitting a few things pretty hard, catching up with some stuff. So I rewatched the Matrix trilogy. I saw the Matrix in 4K on the big screen.
How big?
And pretty big. Bigger than me. I'm not sure how big the screen was. I didn't get my tape measure right. Maybe I should have. Matrix, just as amazing as ever. Seminal, perfect, 5 stars. That's one of my. I haven't got many 5-star films, but I say that's definitely up there. It's probably solidly in my top 10. I think it's just influenced so much. And Reloaded and Revolutions are just films, aren't they? They're just films that take the lore and just as soon as that world opens up, everything kind of feels like it hasn't got as much impact as it did in the original. As soon as we see, you know, people living in this city all dressed like they're in Avatar, I kind of felt a bit like, not so great.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I rewatched Minority Report. That's held up really well. Nearly 20 years old, that film, but that is, again, one of the near-perfect action sci-fi films.
Philip K. Dick book.
The Philip K. Dick story. Yep. He wrote that. But obviously, it's a Steven Spielberg adaptation of that. And yeah, it's good. Tom Cruise is good.
Yeah.
All good. I also watched a film called Booksmart. I'm not sure if you've seen this advertised. It's kind of like a teen comedy.
I've heard it's hilarious.
It is hilarious. So yeah, a lot of people comparing it to things like Superbad, but it's Superbad, but not quite as crude.
Right.
But it's directed by Olivia Wilde, which I didn't know until like I was watching it. And it's good. The two leads are amazing. One of them is Jonah Hill's sister, Beanie Feldstein, the one from What We Do in the Shadows. Caitlin Dever. But yeah, basically the ensemble, like all of the supporting characters are amazing as well. Like everyone's good. Everyone's funny, or everyone's an interesting enough character. And you know, they're not like archetypes. You haven't got like the, even though it's a high school comedy, you haven't got like bullies and, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
it feels very 2019 as well. I saw The Lion King.
How was that?
Which is just okay. Seems a bit weird. It's so uber realistic that you can't really see any emotion. And everything, I know it feels like you're kind of blinded by nostalgia, but everything that you're kind of hoping that appears in it, it does, but it kind of just feels a bit weird. Everything's in place, but it just feels a bit wrong. It feels like a dirty little secret. Like you're going, something feels wrong about this. I don't know what it is. I'm not going to go into things in too depth because I haven't watched any horror, but I also watched a film called Stuber with Dave Bautista.
Is it to do with Uber? Ubers, is it?
It is to do with Uber, okay. So it's Dave Bautista and Kumail Nanjiani, who's going to be in the MCU, in the Eternals,
He's going to be in the Eternals? I don't know anything about
that. Yeah, I don't know much about either.
The comic, yeah.
But the premise is pretty funny. Like, Dave Bautista has had eye surgery and he can't drive, so he's like a cop and he needs this guy to take him everywhere. Basically like Collateral, but comedy. With Tom Cruise. And it was just all right, you know. It was completely watchable, but that's kind of it. It's got some funny moments in it, but it's like a buddy cop movie, but it's a bit by the numbers and in the way it sort of plays that out, you know.
Yeah.
These guys are so different. They're never going to be able to work together. God, they hate each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've heard it's pretty good though.
It's all right.
Yeah,
it's totally all right. But that's it, man. That is it.
So, just because I won't feel good until we do. Other artists on the Swamp Thing book. Stephen R. Bissett was penciler. John Totleburn, the inker. Dan Day, penciler. Rick Veitch, penciler. So it's got like a whole slew of artists doing various bits and pieces.
I was just wondering if Dave Gibbons was perhaps involved. Obviously, Watchmen. Dude.
Yeah.
But maybe not.
Yep.
What are we talking about today, then, Luke Condo?
We are going to talk about The Hills Have Eyes. Not the remake, which is one of my... You know what? I think it's one of my favourite horror movies. I'll talk about it in a bit. But we're talking about the original, which I've kind of held off on for a long time. Because I enjoy the remake so much. But have you got some information?
Sure
ID,
thing.
Please.
ID, please. So, The Hills Have Eyes is a 1977 American horror film written, directed, and edited by Wes Craven. He'd done it all. Starring Susan Lanier, Michael Berryman, and Dee Wallace. The film follows the Carters, a suburban family targeted by a family of cannibal savages after becoming stranded in the Nevada desert.
Cannibal Savage. I mean, that's a death metal album. So, IMDb, 6.4 out of 10. Very, very low. Rotten Tomatoes, 67%, which, you know, is not too bad for a film like this. Interestingly, this is higher than the remake. The remake's on like 51%. People really didn't get along with it at all. We asked the board advisors which one they preferred, and the remake swung it. Most people prefer the remake, but Anthony Doyle said that there's not much in it for me, but the original has a real dirty feel to it. I would say the original is creepy.
Yeah. Oh, it's bloody dirty.
Yeah, go on.
Some things in the original haven't aged so well for me. There are a few things where I kind of felt a bit like... I mean, it's still brutal. It's still pretty horrible. It feels very Texas Chainsaw Massacre, doesn't it? It feels like... The threat feels like the same as that. But there are a few things which we will get into that made it feel a bit silly to me. And even though I probably shouldn't have, I watched the remake like almost immediately after, and there's a hell of a lot in it which is almost identical.
So after I watched it and I was going through my notes, I realized I made the stupidest note I think I've ever written in my life. Surprisingly, a lot like the remake. As if it's going to be anything
else.
It's like I was surprised by how little the remake had changed. Like all the really horrific stuff is in there, like the baby theft, the raping, I don't know what that scene especially. I was like, that must be like a recent extreme horror scene when they sort of assault the van and the woman. But no, it's all pretty much
identical, to the point where, like, I don't know, like, even like the places where people stand seems to be like the same. Like, people stand in that trailer or outside the trailer in almost the same places when the action happens. It's very similar, but obviously the last 20 minutes of the remake, it goes a bit more like crazy vengeance.
I really enjoyed in the remake.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think it's a great... The ending to the original kind of feels a bit like, well, there we go. That's an ending. But this one, you know, kind of feel that the remake, feels like that redemption is there, because really what happens is brutal and horrific. Yeah. And so, the remake was directed by Alexandra Aja.
I say Aja, but
Aja.
I don't know.
So he's directing Crawl, which is out next month. He also directed things like Piranha 3D, Mirrors, Horns, Maniac, and High Tension, which obviously you've been hyping up. I've never actually seen it.
You've seen it. Oh, you're liking it.
I've not seen it.
Yeah.
Maybe I should. Yeah.
Okay. So this is I was surprised by how good it was. I'll be honest. I mean, there's a kind of fear with all the things. It is a little bit over the cliff. Like, it is a little bit slow at times, and it was made for very little budget. It's on 16mm film, so it's got some grain to the point where you can hardly see through it, when it's especially darker stuff. And there's some funny special effects that haven't aged that well. I mean, if there's a head at one point, it's like, obviously not a head. But it's like I said, it's all there. It's got the same feeling. I'm surprised by how usually older movies like this, they tend to be very simple. Like, they tend to be very simply sort of plotted out, but this has got it, the way it sort of grinds the family to these sort of certain moments, and it's got the retribution element to it, but it's not quite as well wrought out as in the remake. But it also has been, and I was along for the ride. I was enjoying it.
It was to mention, it came out on July 22nd, 1977, so I know it's a couple of days ago, so I think maybe you watched it on its birthday.
That's why we're doing it. 2 days ago. That's why we're doing it.
That's why we're doing it, mate. That's why we planned it, obviously.
42nd anniversary, right?
Yeah, 42nd anniversary. That's right, Mr. Maths.
Yeah. So, I was going to say, the remake, I think the reason I enjoy the remake so much, or it held such a special place in my heart, is because that was like the first horror movie I was 18. I was allowed to go to the cinema for. I think I wasn't even 18 at the time, but we went with like girlfriends, and there's a whole load of us, and we watched it, and it was one of those sort of cinema experiences where everyone's screaming and then laughing at themselves for screaming. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
exactly, yeah. But like, it just felt like a real proper horror movie cinema experience where everyone was like really well into it, and then we kind of came out laughing at how silly we sounded. But I don't know, it's just my first experience of that, and it was. And I just really enjoyed the film.
I think I saw it at the cinema as well. You know, I've got
in Mansfield.
in Mansfield, and I was sat behind someone who wouldn't stop screaming and laughing. And I came out and I was fuming. I said, if I ever meet up, he was screaming and laughing. I think his name was Luke, but he had a full head of hair. So
it's not me then.
It's obviously not you.
Born bold. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, I hope I never become bold like him. hey, happened.
Well, okay. So how did you feel about the film?
Yeah, it was It was good. As I said, there are a few bits that kind of felt a bit hammy.
Yeah.
Which obviously shows the film's age. But I think it was tense. It was creepy. It was like a bit like, oh, sickening. If, as I said, it had that Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think obviously whoever said in the Horror Hangout Board of Advisors group that it felt a bit dirty, or it was a bit dirty, I think you're right. It does feel pretty dirty. Not just because of what happens on screen, but just something about it just feels a bit like, ooh. It's one of those situations where I wouldn't like to be in that situation.
Yeah.
Jesus.
What is the... I'm just looking at the cast. What was the name of... Berryman. What's his first name again?
Michael, isn't it?
Michael
Barrymore.
That's what I thought. Is it? But so Michael Berryman, he... I'm trying to remember what the whole story was, but the reason he's sort of the face of the film, because he's not the main killer mutant thing in this film, but he's on the posters and he's got such an iconic face. His dad worked in Japan, I think.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Chris been around Hiroshima and came back, and then he had some radioactive poisoning or something in the system, and that's why Michael Berryman was born in the looks in the way he was. But he's a fantastic guy, and he's been in some great films. The reason he's on the poster, there's something to do with... he could either sue the production company or something for something. I can't remember what it was. Maybe he got bit, or maybe, because I don't think he can't produce sweat. So it could have been something to do with
bit by a dog.
Don't know. I mean, that does happen in the film, but he did sign up for that. So I don't know.
No, that bit was all completely real.
But there's
roll the cameras. He's getting savaged by the dog.
There's some sort of reason why. He could either sue the production company, or they said, oh, we'll put you on the front of the poster and you'll get, like, you know, tons of free advertising. So he did that instead. And that's pretty much what gave him his career, is the sort of, for his look and the way that, you know, he is a strange looking guy, but he's definitely made it work for himself.
He's a savvy businessman. And what's strange as well is that the remake really doubled down on the old, you know, mutants from nuclear fallout stuff, which I don't know if that was, you know, inspired by that, because we don't really get that in this, where it's understood that one of the main guys was just sort of like exiled for being a bit of a nut job, and then he started a horrible inbred family out in the hills, which also have eyes.
Yeah. So this the story is inspired by Sony Bean, which I don't know if it's actually a real thing. Apparently it might be. I think it may be the real, or it might be rooted in reality, which is the guy in Scotland who lived in a cave, and he had a family of like inbred people, 40 or something, like a big tribe of these inbred people. And they used to, people coming to Edinburgh and into Glasgow from the main road from London, they would just attack them and then take them back to the cave and then eat them. They'd like pickle their penises and lots of fun stuff. So this story is inspired by Sawney Bean. I'd like to know if that was a real thing, because that sounds insane if it was real.
Sawney Bean is often considered a mythical figure. That's what it says here. But someone included a gruesome narrative in their great short stories of Detection in 1928. Sawney Bean. Or is he Sean Bean? One of Sean Bean's.
Shawnee Bean, yeah.
Shawnee Bean. Get yourself in here and I'll pickle your penis. No, he's not. He's not London, was he? He's Northern, isn't he? He's Northern. You're kind of Northern. Do the.
He's got a. Sean Bean's Sheffield, got a very. Sheffield. Yeah, Sheffield, yeah. He's got a very. Very
read then Sheffield. I can't do it.
Yeah, I can't do it either.
I need to hear it for a second and then I'll be able to do it. But you know, I mean, I can't. Well, not when I'm put on the spot like that.
Yeah, that's very going more south, but it's good. Yeah. You know, we'll get there.
We'll get there eventually. So
also
key players. Yeah,
Dee Wallace plays the older daughter. We know her from Cujo. And she's in The Howling as well. I think maybe some other things.
She loves it, doesn't she? She loves a good horror. Yeah. She does. So there's like a family called the Carters. There's a dad, a mum, two daughters, a son-in-law, a son, and a baby. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big Bob Carter. Ethel is the mum. Bless you. Pardon.
Thank you.
Brenda Carter. Bobby Carter. Lynn. Yeah, I think I'm getting this right. Yeah, so it's basically two families. A family of inbreds and a family of not inbreds.
I thought Dee Wallace played the daughter and her boyfriend was the outsider. But he's not in this, in the original. It looks like he plays the biological son and she's the outsider. But in the remake,
they
changed it. Really adds to the story.
Yeah. So they change it up in the remake where Ted Levine, who was the dad, he's like a Republican and the son-in-law is like a Democrat. So he's giving him all the old, he's like a gun-toting Republican.
Yeah.
Giving loads of jip for being a weak, feeble, left-wing guy. And obviously that's part of his arc, obviously. And that's part of that character's arc is that he's given time to, you know, redeem himself or, you know, show that
he can become a Republican is he able to kill.
I'm a Republican! He goes like that, and then he rips off his shirt and he's got a Trump t-shirt on underneath.
Yeah.
Trump 2020, alright?
Yeah, but I think it just shows how smart the remake was to sort of change these little bits and to tweak them to really emphasise the character arcs.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, so the family of cannibals are called Papa Jupiter, Mama, Mars, Pluto, Mercury, a little girl called Ruby, and someone called Fred.
I don't know the Fred guy. Oh, that's the gas station attendant.
That's right. So the gas station attendant.
He's like their granddad, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, their granddad. So.
So the film opens. Both of the films open with a suburban Carter family. They're traveling in a big, what do you call those big trucks that people drive and stay in?
Like an RV?
RV. They're driving through the Nevada desert, I believe. And they need gas. So they stop off at the gas station.
Where are they going? They're just going on vacation, right? Is that right?
Yeah. It seems so. Americans are always driving around, aren't they? I thought that was the...
Hey, where are you going? We're driving somewhere where there's no gas station for 500 miles or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they must be going somewhere in their RV. But so they're driving, and as all RVs do, it needs filling up with petrol or diesel. So they stop off at the gas station, and then we get like a proper introduction of everyone. Big Bob, the dad, and everyone else.
And everyone else, and they've got two dogs as well. So two like German shepherds, called Beauty and the Beast, or just Beast.
I thought it was called Beast, but they do say the Beast.
Where is the Beast? Hey, where is the Beast? Yeah. I wonder if they got those names when they're puppies. Like,
yeah, because they kind of grow into them, don't they? Nominative determinism. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, there we go. So they stop at somewhere for fuel, and there's a guy named Fred, some like old dude And he sort of gives them advice, sort of says, stay on the main road.
Don't eat yellow snow.
Just don't eat yellow snow.
Bet heavy on the Dodgers this season.
Yeah. And then Fred's truck, like, explodes, doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
At some point. Is that after they've left?
So he is going to leave. He said, I'm finishing up. There's not much petrol in here because I'm finishing up. I'm heading out. And then Ruby turns up and she's like, I hear you're heading out. This is the youngest mutant daughter. I want to head out with you, please, Granddad. And he's like, no, because if your dad finds out, he'll eat me. And then his car blows up.
Yeah, and then his car blows up. So obviously they realize he's going to leave. So the mutant cannibals have decided, no, you're not. So Ruby just looks a little bit like, what's the child in Flintstones? The little, we got Bam Bam, and then whoever she is.
One from the other family.
Yeah, there's another little child, isn't there? Bam Bam's one of the kids, and then there's like a little girl. Is there a little girl?
I think you're right. Yeah.
Anyway, basically, she just looks like she's dressed as a cavewoman.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing cannibal, mutant, or scary about her. She just looks like a girl dressed like someone's gone, it's Stone Age day tomorrow at school. We got to put together a costume. We'll get this potato sack around you and we'll have a back comb your hair and a glasses made of teeth. Necklace made of teeth, not glasses made of teeth. Well, she can have them as well. Necklace made of teeth, like that hasn't aged well. Yeah. That looks a bit silly. And unfortunately, most of the other cannibals have kind of got that look.
Yeah.
The mum especially has got like an airband or something made out of teeth. And
well, she looks it looks like she's gone for like a Native Indian sort of not like a real authentic one, like a costume.
Like Michael Berryman, because he's like obviously disfigured or a bit was kind of unconventional looking,
weird looking dude.
He is creepy because there's something otherworldly strange about him. Mm. But everyone else kind of just looks like. Like, in particular, is it Mars, who's like one of the dudes, the guy with curly hair?
Yeah,
he's got like sharp teeth.
Yeah.
He looks like Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy. like the boys are back in town, are gonna eat your dick. He's got like sharp teeth. He looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is it a wig? Because sometimes it looks like his hair. I'm thinking it's the 70s. But his hair sometimes is like sort of haphazardly placed on his head. And I'm like, that's a wig, and it's a bad wig. He looks ridiculous. He looks like he looks like 10-year-old kids have decided to give someone a disguise.
There's another one we don't see too much of, I don't think. I think you see his teeth, but his normal teeth. And then he's like,
that's his teeth.
And he falls off a cliff.
That's the one. And even Papa Jupiter looks kind of ridiculous.
They put like a weird cut in his nose.
That looks kind of cool. But later on, when we see him in the daylight, he looks like someone cosplaying as
Kevin
Pocahontas.
Keegan.
Kevin Keegan crossed with Pocahontas. Oh, Kevin O'Hontas, mate. Kevin O'Hontas. He just looks nuts. So you've got Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy, and it looks like a family dressed as the Flintstones to go to Comic-Con.
Yeah, I agree. whereas the other family, they look like a real family. They look quite well with their costumes there.
Yeah.
So they drive on. I don't know if there's a reason why they crash. They just kind of slide off the road. Very slippy road.
Yeah, so that's it. They're arguing.
Yeah.
And they see they're arguing, and then a plane like sort of flies off and it scares them, like a fighter jet or something like that, isn't it? And then there's a rabbit in the road, and so they just skid off the road and crash. Pretty much immediately, the dogs are like very barky. And then when they let the dogs out, Beauty runs off into the hills. Mm. And the young teenager, chases after to try and find her. And he finds her mutilated body.
He does a flip as well. Did you see that?
Does he do a flip?
Does a flip.
What, front or backwards?
Front flip. He's like, running away from the sister and he does a flip. Also, they casually mentioned that the beast ate a poodle or killed a poodle. They very casually go, remember when Beast killed that poodle?
Classic beast.
Yeah. That's why we're on the run now. That's why they've had to escape, because they don't want to be put down.
So they come up with a plan. So basically, Bob, so Big Bob, the dad, is going to walk back to the gas station. It's about, what does he say, 15 miles? It should happen by the time night falls. And then does he say, I think he says to his son as well, he's going to walk basically the other way and see what he can find.
Yeah, yeah.
If he can find help, see if he can find, you know, whatever. Because they're trying to get signals. They're trying to find a signal with the radio as well, because of all the hills around, they can't find anything.
Yeah, so you say Beauty, the kid finds Beauty mutilated, and he stumbles, falls, and then he comes back. He's quite a good performance, I think, from that kid. There's the whole bit where he's like, he's obviously got this terrible news, but he doesn't quite know how to tell anyone yet. And he's trying to bring it up. And when he does, eventually he's kind of choking up. And and also the beast breaks his chain and runs away. So we don't really know what... The beast is very clever in this.
These dogs, bloody hell, Jesus. Someone... They just go around and do what they want, mate. They run away.
Eat poodles.
So, yeah, when Big Bob gets back to the gas station, he finds Fred, who's, like, just about to kill himself.
Yeah.
But even though he's killing himself, doesn't he, like, shoot through the door as well?
What? Big Bob shoots through the door? Or...
Yeah. No, the other way around, isn't it? Oh, no, maybe it's Big Bob who shoots through the door. I can't remember. They have some sort of misunderstanding. And then when he goes in, Fred's trying to kill himself, which obviously Big Bob stops him. And then he tells a story about how his son, Jupiter, great name, killed, like, went growing up, killed, like, the family's livestock, later murdered his sister. So basically, and then he went off to live, you know, in the hills, and he's still coming back to his dad and, what, terrorizing him or something? I don't know. Being a bastard. Just being a right bastard.
Yeah. Well, in the remake, I think the gas station then is like just trading with them or something, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. So in the remake, the gas station is not related to them, but he's kind of like providing them various things, and he's kind of had enough. He's like ready to kill himself, and then he does in the remake. But in this one, Fred actually dies by getting attacked by Jupiter, who like beats him to death with a tire iron. And the reason he does that is maybe because he's helping this guy. I don't know.
Yeah. But they attack Bob and they take Bob. Bob, who's the big, authoritative, manly man, he's sort of led to be the pillar of safety for the rest of the family. And the fact that he gets taken, and then I don't know if they do this or not, but this is quite brutal. They sort of nail his hands into a Joshua tree. Is that in the remake? Did they? And I know they tie into it, but did they?
Pretty much the same, and they light him on fire.
Jesus.
Yeah, so it's pretty brutal, isn't it? So then we find out a bit more about the family as well, that Papa Jupiter had children with an alcoholic prostitute known as Mama. I don't know if she was called that before she became a mum. That would be strange. They have three sons. Mars,
baby,
Pluto.
Mama.
Hey, this is Mama. Why? Because she's going to be a good mama one day. they got three boys, Mars, Pluto, and Mercury, a girl called Ruby. It's just basically cannibal... weird family. I say inbred, but it doesn't actually sound like they are inbred.
No, they're not inbred, are they? Because
I take it back. Sorry, guys, if I've just called you inbred, pretty bad.
Maybe Jupiter was inbred. Maybe he was like the one that was. I don't know.
He was the first. He was the first inbred. So yeah. So basically, they crucify Big Bob and light him on fire, sort of what say like 100 meters away from from the trailer. It's nighttime now as well. And obviously everybody runs out, like, what the hell's going on? And the mum and one of the brothers, like, run towards Bob, who's on fire. And so basically that's used as a distraction.
Yeah.
For two of the guys. Is it Pluto and Mars?
I always get confused, but
all right, Phil Lynott and Michael Barrymore go in there.
Okay.
Phil Lynott and Michael Barrymore go in there, basically terrorize the rest of the family while they're tending to Big Bob, who's on fire. So
one of them eats the bird. They've got like a pet parakeet. He just rips his head off.
And this all of this is pretty much in the remake as well, eating the bird. And that's when Michael Barrymore... No, not Michael Barrymore, the other one. Phil Lynott. Phil Lynott rapes Brenda while this is happening as well.
And then he shoots the mother.
Yeah, so the mother basically comes back in and sort of just goes, what's going on here then? She just gets shot straight in the gut.
Yeah.
And then the other daughter, the daughter-in-law, the mother of the baby.
Yeah.
Comes back and one of them's got the baby in her hand and she tries to get it off and she gets shot as well, pretty much in the stomach. So it's pretty brutal already, you know, just
there's a bit things where like, the youngest daughter is getting raped. We don't know that, but it looks like she's getting raped. And then the brother comes back to get some supplies, get a gun or something. And he says, look after the baby. And then because the blinds are pulled shut, he doesn't even know that he's leaving his sister to Phil Lynott. It's pretty horrific. Like, especially for like this that time. I mean, I can't imagine. It's not particularly gory, is it, this film? But like, it's still got like a really nasty bite to it.
It's just brutal. Yeah, it's just one of those. Again, this is what makes me think of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Is that pretty much very early into the film, or very, you know, these people are under, you know, you don't expect something like this to happen immediately, you know, so many people to be killed or hurt just so quickly. And I think that's that gritty realism that makes this film feel so yucky.
It gets
under your skin, feel a bit dirty, a bit grimy.
So the brothers come back and they sort of chase them off, but it's too late by that point, the damage has already been done. They have a baby and they're talking about how they're going to eat it. Like one of them's saying, I'm going to eat the toes. I'm going to put it in a stew.
Yes. So earlier they did eat some of the dog. So they ate some of Beauty.
Yeah.
And they sort of say, you know, no more dog for us. We're going to have a lovely juicy baby.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've never thought about eating a baby, but at the same time, that baby was tiny. And I thought in my head, there's like five of them. I'm going to go around, have a baby leg, a baby arm.
Yeah, that's, I mean,
this is a horrible thing to discuss.
If you think about, I mean, that's like a good meal. That's a chicken, like a, you know, turkey, like a full turkey. Like it will last you a little while. But the human, like the adults, they're like deers, or they're going to last you months if you have a freezer, which I'm guessing they don't.
Yeah. They got a chest freezer plugged in one of their caves that they're living in. Pretty much now, Big Bob, the dad who's been crucified and set on fire, he's dead. And then we've also got the mum, Ethel.
Yeah, she's on her way out.
She's like on her way out. She's pretty much dead. Lynn is pretty much dead.
There was a horrific bit where Bob's on fire, and they put him out, but he's obviously dying. And the mum is just laughing. She's saying, "That's not Bob.
That's not him." Yeah.
I think that's weird.
I mean, it's shock. It's just one of those things that, again, makes it feel real, you know, because people are acting, even though that seems completely crazy, like it feels believable, you know, that someone would act like that. Because how would you react seeing one of your loved ones suddenly just strung up and set on fire? Because the concept of that is
so far horrific. From what you can
accept. I mean, I couldn't expect it. I'd never expect it to happen on a weekend. You know, I'm going to enjoy the weekend.
On a Friday? Well, maybe.
On a Friday night?
Yeah.
So the boys rush back, and when they find everyone, like, either dead or pretty much, you know, Brenda, who's been raped as well, she's traumatized, she's screaming, she doesn't want anyone to come near her.
So this is where the beast returns.
The beast returns. He's been milling about, and he does one of the cannibals called Mercury gets like nudged off a hilltop and falls to his death, which the beast is like, I'm gonna kill these motherfuckers for fucking my family.
It's a bit, the dog is almost too smart, I think, to be believable, because like he doesn't just attack the Mercury. He sort of sneaks up behind him and then just nudges, like pushes him off he dies, but then he picks up the walkie talkie and then like takes it with him back to the he's too smart for a dog.
He's way too smart, So around about here, Mama chains Ruby outside the cave as well. It's like tormenting her because she was sympathizing with the Carters. Obviously, she didn't want them to be killed
the way they
were. And she's like forcing her to eat the dog. So it was all pretty brutal. And then the next morning. So it's weird that the rest of this film kind of plays out in daylight, which is, you know, I mean, how many films are in, I mean, it doesn't, for a film of this era, horror film as well, for it to play out in daylight doesn't feel, again, another reason why it probably feels a lot like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, even though all of that doesn't happen in a day.
Do you feel like he watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre and like saw the success of it and was like, I'd like to try and recreate some
of
that?
So what was it? It was Texas Chainsaw Massacre of 76, is that right? Oh, no, sorry, 74. So it was a few years before. So, I mean, it's hugely inspired by that, I think, obviously. Yeah. But as I said, some bits just... I think the costume design is one of the things that kind of... Because everything else is in place, like the genuine threat, the creepiness of everybody involved is all... But the
you
costume...
You are right. If they had, you know, the design on Leatherface and the creepy... corpse granddad thing.
Yeah, because that just looks like something you'd find. They look like they find those clothes and wear them, or you know, they are their clothes, but just a bit.
Yeah, if it had just that bit more, it would have been a, it would have been something special.
I think it was the teeth necklaces and the teeth bracelets and like the things in their hair.
Yeah,
it just did feel like too cliche cave woman.
Yeah,
or caveman.
So, what's his name? Takes the walkie-talkie back to our two lads who are now like keen to get the baby back. That's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And then on the flip side, they have decided, the mutants have decided they're going to go and kill the rest of the people, right?
Yeah. So the mutants obviously want to kill the rest of the family for whatever reason. So they kind of like set a trap. Which two is it? This is the younger ones, isn't it? So it's like Bobby and Brenda. They set a trap where it's like they put their mum on a seat who's dead like that. And Papa Jupiter and... Is it Michael Berryman? Because Michael Berryman at this point starts getting ravaged by the beast.
He has a fight with the beast,
He has a fight with the beast. The beast is fucking him up, like tearing, like ripping his skin, you know, making him really... really mugging him off.
Yeah.
Papa Jupiter is doing some weird thing where he's just like, I'm going to run as fast as I can towards this thing and I'm fuming. I'm going to have it. And they set a trap where they kind of like put like a cable
around the wheel. It's a bit of a Home Alone trick.
It's a bit of a Home Alone trick and it ends up dragging him towards it and then the final...
If that happened, it would drag him towards him and then he'd stand up and then...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But then they do have a final bit for the plan, which is that they're gonna let all the gas out of these canisters inside the trailer, and then they've got this makeshift some matches on like a bit of sticky tape, which they just put onto the bottom of the door, which I feel like it might work, but it might not work.
Yeah.
And they shut the door, and then they get out the window, hide away. When Papa Jupiter comes in, he smells the gas. He's one step ahead of them. But then
he's got two noses.
He's got two noses. Yeah, one nose goes in that way, and one nose smells the gas. But the trailer still explodes, right?
Yeah, but he kind of makes it explode. I think to sort of distract them.
Yeah, I love making things explode. Just look at it, go fucking explode, bang! Distracts them.
So
yeah, go on.
How does he get away? They run away from him at this point or something, or
find Papa Jupiter decided to kill it. Yeah, so the beast like tears Pluto's throat out as well, right?
Yeah, beast kills Pluto.
They use it as a trap to kill. So I think what happens is they do end up killing him. I think maybe Papa Jupiter gets hold of Bobby and then Brenda hits him with something.
Yeah,
but basically they kill Papa Jupiter. They manage to do that.
Yeah.
And then while Doug is trying to save the baby, Ruby basically runs away with the baby.
Yeah.
Doug managed to catch up with her, but it's Mars, Phil Lynott, who's chasing after him. He's following. And he's fuming. He's like, oh, the boys are back in town. Bloody, the whiskey's in the jar. I'm Irish. I've run out of my Finn Lizzie. So basically he's chasing after them for ages. And then Doug and him get into like a bit of a scuffle and a fight with a knife. And then Doug stabs him to death
repeatedly.
Ruby's crying. and then the screen fades to red. That's the end. So our family, even though they've lost most three of their members, they win, I guess. And I guess, what is this film trying to explain? What is this trying to portray, this film? That it doesn't take much to turn you, to turn normal people savage.
Yeah, to reduce you to savagery. Yeah, like, it doesn't take much to reduce someone to savagery.
Just protecting your own is what's going to reduce you to savagery. Yeah. We're not so different from the cannibals. You know, they might eat, they might be cannibalistic, but we're not so different, you know? That's what it's trying to portray, yeah? So, go on.
Which one do you prefer? Sequel or remake?
So, the remake, this film just feels like it kind of fizzles out. Mm. The family, they get their revenge, essentially, and get their baby back, which is lovely. But the remake, around about, you know, this ending, when they all split off and go to, you know, set traps and find the baby and stuff. Mm. There's something really good about the remake is the fact that, you know, Doug's character goes off and has like a redemption story himself, where he becomes the hero, becomes the big Bob of the family. Yeah, he takes over the mantle of that, fights all of the, and you know, you feel really tense during it because he's on the back foot, he's on his ass, he's stabbed, his glasses are like smashed off his face,
creature thing.
He's thrown through walls. But
it's visceral. It's like it's a really sort of builds a giant crescendo of thrilling.
And we kind of understand about the family a bit more. There's a really there's a disfigured guy in a wheelchair who sort of says, your people have been testing their bombs and they told us to leave, but we didn't, and they didn't care, and they destroyed our homes, and look at us. And, you know, so you kind of understand, you know, their point of view as well. Whereas in this, in the original, we're kind of like, oh, they're just cannibals and crazy people. There's nothing about them really explains that. But the vengeance and the redemption of the remake really does tie it off nicely. And unfortunately, the original kind of just fizzles out. Like, oh, how are we going to end this? Oh, yeah, they probably just do this.
It feels like the first one is a bit of a prototype, and the remake just tweaked certain elements, added more of an ending to it, and it just really... I think the remake is the one to watch. If I'm going to advise anyone to watch one, I'd say watch the remake.
Yeah, I think the remake is a lot better, and you know, it's rare for a film, you know, especially horror. I think it's kind of real. I think it's pretty much a rare for a film to be remade and be better. But I think it does. It's the perfect kind of remake where, like, obviously, it emulates almost everything identically. Everything that worked, everything that doesn't work, it kind of goes, well, here's where it could have gone, and here's where it could go, which I think is smart.
Yes, it's a perfect remake, really. Trivia. We're going to play another game of the name game. I give you a story synopsis, and you name the film using the convention, The Hills Have Eyes. So it'll always be something like this, something has something. Okay, so number one. A family is driving through the Nevada desert when they find a tribe of upper legs living in the hills.
The Hills Have Thighs?
Yes, correct.
Oh, not a tribe of upper legs, mate. Oh, that's terrifying.
Number two. Will Wheaton and Prince William set up a pie shop to great success.
The Wills have pies.
Correct. Number three. You're at a restaurant and you get the bill. Wait, you didn't order that second round of Coca-Colas. That's just untrue.
The bills have lies.
You're really good at this. Number four. This might sound familiar. A family is driving through the Nevada desert and they get attacked by a family of secret agents living in the hills.
The hills have spies?
Yeah. Okay, this one is... you won't get this one. It's too hard. You might do. You've done really well. Number five. A Victorian period drama about an author who sets out to write the filthiest erotica novel known to man using really old pens. Sorry, erotica novel, old pens. That's your...
Erotica novel, old pens. The Quills have... it's on the tip of my tongue, but hit me with it anyway.
The Quills have size.
I probably wouldn't have got that. It's not on the tip of my tongue. Hard. I lied when I said that. I got half of it, though. I got 50%.
Mate, you did surprisingly well. Have you been practicing?
Shouldn't have doubted me, mate.
Yeah.
I knew it was coming. I've been practicing all day.
I thought you wouldn't get the second one, the Wills Have Pies. You nailed it.
I nailed it, mate. I'm just proud. I'm proud. I'm going to put that on my CV.
Good. Okay, so to review the film.
So, as I said, I think it's a good film. It is aged well in some parts, aged not so well in others. Some bits let it down, like story-wise. I think it's good. Direction, characters, acting's all pretty good. Just some bits sort of let it down, and it does, unfortunately, fizzle out. So I'd probably give it a C+. Is that fair? And in context, if I'm giving this a C+, I would give the Hills Have Eyes remake a B.
Okay.
What did I say?
A C plus. Okay, so I also gave it a C+. I mean, it's great. I just think it's a little bit over the hill. The costumes does let it down, but it's low budget. What can you expect? And like I said, I'd recommend the remake before. I'd probably give the remake. I haven't seen it in a long time, so I can't quite remember. But in my head, it's an A- film, but it's probably more like a B+ if I were to watch it again.
Yeah, I think I'd give it a B, the original, because I think maybe it's because I just watched the original before that, but because it plays out very similarly to that, it wasn't until that final 20 minutes that I really got like, oh yeah, come on then, let's have a look, let's see the do it a bit.
Yeah. Okay, so that's all for now. We've done the review. What else do you want from us? What are we doing next week? Are we going to do Crawl when it's out? That's not out for a little while.
Yeah, so I don't think it's out for a few more weeks, Crawl. So in August, we're going to do Crawl, and we're going to do Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. So I don't know. What do you reckon? Should we have a little look back at the older IGN list and see?
I think the next one is Halloween 3 on that. So I can't remember Halloween 3 much at all.
Season of the Witch.
Yeah.
Maybe we could do that. I might need to watch Halloween 2 as well, just to fill in that gap, because you know that's the way I roll. You know, I don't know what's wrong with me.
It's
not related.
No, it's not related. But
it's not related, but you know,
yeah,
I'm like that. I like to fill in the gaps, mate. All right.
Yeah, of course you do.
I like the gaps to be filled in. So yeah, we could do that. Or if anyone's got a suggestion, hit us up on Horror Hangout Board of Advisors Facebook group, or you can find us on Twitter. Can't you, Luke?
At Hawk and Cleaver, or at Ben Errington.
At Ben_Errington and
at Luke of Condor. So thanks to the thanks to Cobalt Cameron for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rating and review in iTunes, and remember to hit subscribe. Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a right or a dude. For being
Thank you, Luke.
A quiz master.
You're a quiz master. I am merely a pupil who did all right this time.
You should go on Mastermind based on the name game around Hills of Eyes.
Well, what's your specialist subject?
It's quite specific. You've just seen the Hills of Eyes, not the film itself, but the naming convention around it. Yeah,
there we go. And he'll be like, "Well, here we go, round one." Well, I'll fail at the general knowledge round. Wills have pies? No, the answer is Columbia.
Right. Okay, man. I'm going to go.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.